Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Good morning. Welcome to Medicine on Call. This is Dr. George, and today we're going to have a little bit of a different spin to our show. We talk a lot about how we can navigate this new healthcare system delivery that we have. I know it's not getting any better. Everybody who walks into my office is now waking up to the patients, that is, or waking up to the reality that what they signed up for, they're definitely not getting. And we've talked about it on the show before, that there's an open season on independent physicians, and it's getting harder for us to keep our practices open. There are now about a third, I think maybe less now, of private practice physicians owning their own practices, free and clear from the hospital system, and it's a dwindling number between those that are retiring and those that are leaving and opening or doing something else completely different. There's now a movement towards direct private primary care practices, total cash-only practices, and this is different from the typical concierge-based practice in the past where it was a couple of thousand a year just to sign up. I think there's a lot of free market movement going on. And one of the things the show is going to do today is to speak to those physicians who still have an entrepreneurial spirit that hasn't been beaten out of them and need to understand and know what techniques they can use to keep their practice open. A few weeks ago, I had Frank Martin on my show, and we spoke a lot about real-world techniques and strategies that we can use to help our practices grow. We didn't get into a lot of the marketing side of it and a lot of the nuts and bolts, and today we're going to do that. So I've not only brought Mr. Martin back to my show, but I have two other guests. We have Jeff Mady, is that correct?
That's correct.
And Amanda Rapey,
correct.
If I pronounced them both correctly. And they're going to tell us or give us some strategies about how we can navigate this system, make it work for us, not be forced into becoming an employee of a big corporate system, because when you become an employee, you lose your autonomy. We talked about that before. And if you really want to continue to practice medicine the way you trained, this is the way you have to do it. So I want to welcome everybody to the show. Thank you for, you know, spending the hour with me. I know you have other things to do, but it's going to be an eye-opening show, I'm convinced. And I'm looking forward to it for myself, because I have some dog in this hunt as well. So why don't we start with you, Mr. Mady.
Great. Thank you so much. Thanks for having us on the show here, and we're excited to spend some time talking about how to help the independent physicians market and grow their practices. Myself, I come from the advertising and media background. Spent a lot of time marketing physician practices and hospitals for the last 15 years. Both we started in the magazine world, and for the last 5 or 6 years has really moved everything. It's digital. So we do websites, we do search engine optimization, and a lot of things right now for the healthcare space. It's a lot about reputation management. So we spend a lot of time on those online reviews that doctors love and hate. So
I guess I'm finding that it's very powerful. A lot of people are coming to me because of what's written online.
They can be.
I didn't realize you can manage it in the sense that people, obviously you can't remove reviews, I would think.
Right. So, I mean, that's been tried. So there was companies out there, and you know, I always tell people, if you want to try and sue Google, they're not afraid of China. They're not afraid of your attorney. You're not going to sue your reviews away off of Google. But so when we say manage, we see a lot of practices, low volume, high volume. You know, you have practices that may see several hundred patients a week, mm-hmm. and their online reputation is being impacted by 7 or 8 reviews over the last 2 years.
Wow.
And so it's really, it's getting more voice, encouraging more patients to review you online. There's systems and tools. We can talk about that, where you can ask each patient for surveys. And then the positive ones, follow up with them to ask them for reviews online. And the negative ones, hopefully you can follow up with them to see what went wrong.
Got you. Let's start off or continue with Mr. Martin.
Yeah, my company is a medical consultants group, and my job is to help independent practices improve and protect their revenue. And marketing is certainly a great way to start that. If you're not aware of what you can do to control and manage your reputation online, and if you're not aware of how that can affect the number of new patients your practice is getting and the percentage of patients you retain in your practice, I think that we'll be able to help you at least understand that, and we'll give you the basics of what you need to do to understand your market and where to go from there.
Ms. Weepy, what about you?
Thanks for having me. I've spent my entire career in healthcare, starting in the pharmaceutical industry. And as you said, you've seen a lot of changes, obviously, in healthcare and are feeling them as an independent provider. We saw that in the pharmaceutical industry. And we have a company called Crown Tenant Advisors, which does healthcare real estate. We're a boutique firm located here in Georgia and in Tennessee. And basically what we do is we help healthcare tenants and buyers with their real estate transaction. Real estate ends up being one of the very top items in terms of costs, especially to a small office. Mm-hmm. It's usually one of the top three, but it's not something that's thought about on a daily basis, because you touch it and then you're on to all the other daily issues that are being faced with in the practice. So we have an opportunity to be able to help practices, whether they're leasing or purchasing. We are very unbiased in the sense that we stay just on working on the tenant or buyer side. We don't, as you drive around town, won't see any signs for Crown Tenant Advisors. And we're just working with medical practices, veterinarians, and dental practices.
What I read on your website is that you don't charge for your services to the doctor or the vet, right? Is that correct?
That's correct. And sometimes people think, well, something sounds too good to be true. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to help me and then I'm not going to have to pay for it. It probably is. And the reality is the landlord or the seller has agreed to pay a commission to their broker, and we are taking a portion of that commission. And so our clients hire us to work exclusively on their behalf. Mm-hmm. Our job is to get that landlord or seller to accept their least profitable margin. Mm-hmm. And yet they pay us because we're taking a portion of that commission. So, and sometimes people think, oh, if I don't use somebody, I'll save money. That's not the case. Oftentimes that commission will be received by the landlord's broker, and they went into that negotiation without having representation.
That's really good to know. And I know this is probably a little bit outside the box, but I'm curious, are you seeing any private practice doctors? Are they coming to, is there some sort of groundswell of independent doctors looking for your services? Because it's all about us growing as a number, in my opinion, not falling by the wayside.
You know, we have. Is it probably what it was years and years ago? And definitely it's a smaller number. We know we saw the hospital systems gobbling up some of these internal medicine and mm-hmm. Practices. Certainly depending on the specialty, there's certain specialties that are definitely staying independent. For example, we just opened up a dermatology startup in Alpharetta. We've got a couple of internal medicine physicians that quite frankly were part of the large health system. And as you mentioned, losing your autonomy was important to them. They went into practice to provide for patients, and they were told what formulary to use. They were told how to practice medicine, how many patients they had to see, and they weren't able to practice the way in which they wanted to. And so these two physicians I'm talking about at the top of my head within the last, right now, one going on, the other one about 18 months ago, they left those health systems because, quote, they didn't want to be a cog in the wheel, and opened up a practice and are doing well. And the other one is getting ready to open and has a pretty strong plan in place to be successful.
That's awesome. I mean, I think the more that people or doctors know that you don't have to recreate the wheel. I mean, I think we're a group is I hate to put it badly about our profession, but there's a lot of sheep out there who don't want to be the first one out, who are afraid to do something or try something different, even though you can be really miserable. It's just the fear of making the step. And cost always, I think, comes into play. So that's knowing that you can have somebody, at your back who could help you get a new spot. Because I think that was one of the major, when I left my group, 15 years ago, I guess now, we had a non-compete for 15 miles.
Wow.
And I know. And so I got 15.1 mile or something away from the group. And I actually had to do it myself. And there was a sign up. And that's how I found my practice. And I don't know if I would have, I think it'd be harder to have that mindset today because people are so beaten down. But just knowing you actually go and find the spot, people just say, I want to be in Alpharetta or I want to be in this section. And then you do all the legwork for them. Is that how it works?
Absolutely. And we are used to working in non-competes, and we've seen those significant non-competes quite often. And so absolutely, that's what we start with first. And there's some ways that we can do the radial to make sure that we're out of a non-compete if we're working within that. And then sometimes people think they just want to be in a space because they think that's a good space, you know, a good area to be in, may not have taken consideration to the competition. So we look at the competition and we'll do a competition survey. You know, we also want to consider where the physician lives, especially here in Atlanta, because of traffic. You don't want to spend an hour each way in a commute if you can help it. So those are things that we'll consider as we're going through it. And then also, most importantly, demographics. We look at demographics, you know, in terms of potential growth for the area, the income levels, family, numbers of kids is important if you're going to be a pediatric practice, certainly, you know, so we're looking at those numbers to kind of get the best area for that practice if they're doing a satellite or if they are starting up, and then kind of pull that together to identify the right property. So then we'll consider, do they want an office location? Is visibility and retail type setting important as we're starting to see some practices move towards a retail setting because they want the convenience and they want the signage for that extra marketing? So are those the type, what type of practice are they visualizing? And then we'll pull together those properties and do all of that legwork that you had to do and show them properties that are outside of that non-compete if they have one and that sort of thing.
That's awesome. I mean, this is like a turnkey type of situation. The next piece would be, how do you market yourself? Because I know that hospitals are playing hardball, and they're in the position now where they're trying to demean doctors if you don't have maintenance or certification, for example. They're trying to market it in such a way that you're not a good physician. And really what it is just, it's a game. And I know that the hospitals are trying to angle to get rid of any competition they can possibly have. How do we stay in the game against them?
So the good and the bad news we always tell people is that patients don't always choose doctors for the right reasons, but you need to understand why they are choosing them and speak to that. And you know, one of the things, for better or for worse, that's been proven in advertising is that the latest and greatest machine and technology type messaging and ads that the hospitals are big on really don't work near as well as just feel good personable ads. Now, I understand that might offend some physicians and medical folks, and so this, I'm just stating kind of the facts of it, but that you need to understand why people do buy, and then the individual practices, it's actually easier for you to control your own messaging as opposed to these practices that have hundreds of doctors and you can't do it. You can tell your messaging, and so you can speak to what people want and what they're looking for. And a lot of times it's just a little bit more time with a doctor, or just a little bit better understanding, close its location. There's a lot of different things. And so when you're your own solo practitioner, it's easier to make your message your message. And I've told people I chose one of my doctors over the last couple of years because of negative reviews on his listings on Google. And it was the negative reviews. You could tell that they were people that were a little bit offended that he had told them that as opposed to just taking drugs, they should go and do, you know, exercise or something of that nature. And I was like, see, to me, I want somebody to play hardball with me. And it's the funny thing is we actually do that a little bit with our physicians. I mean, we educate and we also challenge our physicians to say, okay, yeah, we understand that people don't choose doctors for all the right reasons. We can't solve that. Mm-hmm. But what we can do is help you get your message out in front of the right people.
There's one thing, and I'm going to take a break in a minute, and you can think about this in the break. If there's one thing that, or one medium, I know you do a lot of digital, and back in the day it was print ads and, you know, giving full color ads and whatever brochures coming out, just so we can save our money, because I've wasted a lot of money over the years falling into the trap of, you know, maybe we'll feature your group in this glossy handout or mailer, and it's just wasted every single dime that I put into it. So I want your bang for the buck. What should doctors be looking at? And you can answer that when we come back. Let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. We're speaking today about how doctors can navigate a system so that we can take our power back, keep our practices open, and play the game against the big guys and win. And before the break, we were talking about how to spend your advertising dollar in a way that's not going to waste time and money. And I wanted to know what your number one thing, which you'd recommend a doctor do.
So I know everybody doesn't like when we do this, but it's a unique to each situation. So to give you an example, we go into physician practices where they have negative reviews online. And so they may have, when you search their name for the doctor or the practice, you may see, like on the front page of Google and other search engines, 2 yellow stars out of 5. If you have that situation, the best thing you can do is fix that, because what's happening right now is if someone's being referred to you by another physician or a friend or insurance, if they go there, referrals today aren't as strong as they used to be. We just don't know our neighbors and things as much as we used to. And so I don't get one referral for a physician if something happens. I get 2 or 3. And so I go and I look at those. And if somebody has 2 or 3 negative reviews, they just instantly get crossed out. And again, this may be a physician that's seen 1,000 patients this year or whatever it is. And we're looking at 2 or 3 reviews make a difference. So that's a starting, because it's driving away insurance referrals, all referrals. And then outside of that, it depends on the type of practice. And so, if it's primary care and they have an urgent care component, it really is a big deal to then do some Google AdWords and SEO for urgent care near me, and it drives. I mean, hospitals are buying urgent cares because that's the source of getting a patient into a practice.
Right.
I mean, so they're figuring that out and doing it. So that's a great entry point, and you can advertise on that. There's also some unique things. So when we get into surgical procedures and practices, we were talking earlier about the patients want to spend more time. So I was just talking with an orthopedist about this the other day, that if you start running ads online or in the magazines or anywhere talking about hip replacement, joint replacements, or anything, there's all this negative and positive news out there. If I'm going to look at something like that, and just, I don't need anything right now, but just if I was looking at something like that, you're going to want to spend a little bit of time with a physician and hear their side. Well, the way that the practices are today, it's obviously hard for a physician to sit for 30 minutes or 40 minutes and talk somebody through the pros and the cons. So what we've done with some of our practices is say, look, set up an every Tuesday or every other Tuesday, you have everything you need to know about joint replacements. And anybody that comes into the practice and asks about it, or if you're advertising online or that, advertise the event. And then you can get 10, 15, 20 people to come in. And then as a physician, you probably can afford to sit and talk for 45 minutes or an hour to a group of 10 or 15 people. And you're talking about kind of a higher dollar procedure, obviously, in this case, if it's a surgical type thing. So every situation is unique, but making sure that you're not losing your referrals. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why one of the big reasons physicians haven't advertised in the past, they just thought it was all referral based, which is true. But to say that online marketing is just marketing, it's really a lot more about physician. It's about managing your reputation and what people see. And is there something on your site that says, this is who I want to go and see?
Gotcha. And what about testimonials? Do they really make a big difference?
Testimonials in all industries work way better than they should. They really do work. And there's less faith put in testimonials that are put on your site, because it's just so obvious that they can be just made up on the fly. And mm-hmm. there are unfortunately advertisers that literally leave it as, S. Smith is the testimonial provider, and everybody's like, whoa, that's not it. Okay. So third party, the hated sites of Yelp and Google and all these things, those reviews are incredibly trusted. And once you get to 6 or 7 reviews, 75% of people put an enormous amount of trust in what that represents about your practice, which is amazing, both good and bad.
Gotcha. And there's something called ZocDoc. I don't know if you know about that. I mean, it's grown from, I remember when it first came out, now it's huge.
Yeah.
That's been, I found it's kind of overtaken Yelp and the rest of that. What's your take on it?
Yeah, so I'm familiar with ZocDoc. We actually talk and have relationships with HealthGrades reps and ZocDoc reps and things like that, because we do look at the whole picture for our practices, what's online. Mm-hmm. One of the things I tell people about ZocDoc is that it was created for what the patients wanted, not what the physicians wanted. And that's really one of the things that makes it work. We as patients love that if I need to see an ENT and I search for an ENT in Roswell, that I can go and I click on ZocDoc and there's three ENTs that have 12:30 appointments this afternoon or 2:30 this afternoon or one tomorrow. Again, I'm not here to tell you people make decisions on doctors for the right reasons, but that is a big reason. And that is one of the reasons ZocDoc has been so successful.
Well, I found it, I mean, it now syncs with the electronic medical record system. So, you know, if you're trying to fill your day or not, you can block your day as well. It really does make a big difference. And a lot of reviews come through that as well, I find.
Yeah, you get a lot of reviews. And the physicians and practices I've talked to that have used it, they've been very successful. Like if they bring a new physician in or they just have, if they've moved to a new area and they're trying to fill their schedule, it does a very good job of filling the schedule. I can't speak to what types of patients and things it brings in, but we haven't really heard a lot negative about ZocDoc.
I guess I've been a member of it for maybe 4 years now, as soon as it started, and I find the patients are... they're consumers. You know, they know why they're there. They want to be treated a certain way. They expect it. Mm-hmm. We offer it, so it's not hard for us. But it's a patient that's going to work with you, like a teammate. And I remember the Yellow Page era. The crowd that comes to the Yellow Pages are completely different. I mean, we'd advertised online, and we had a way for patients to email us through the website.
Yep.
People are there at 3 a.m. emailing the most bizarre things. Like, what are you doing at 3 a.m? And it was just, I didn't want that kind of patient base. And it's a loaded question, but the Yellow Page patient versus a Yelp or a ZocDoc, is that a different, really a different demographic from your experience? Because it seemed like it from ours, but...
Yeah.
So
the online demographic is a higher income, higher educated. So Google did a big research study on the patient journey. And so specifically to healthcare, but also just we've seen this for other industries that more educated consumers are online more and researching more than less educated and income. There's definitely specific ties to the online audience, and there's good and bad reasons for that. But yes, they're more educated and they're researching, and it goes both ways. Some people are researching just enough and they get a little bit maybe too educated by the drug companies and they come in and tell you exactly what they need and just sign them up. Others spend a little bit more time and they're actually willing to have a conversation. They're almost, and as you alluded to, they're almost demanding that you have a conversation. It's, you know, it seems to me when we talk with patients and things that they're not just going to say, they don't want to just be told, take this drug and be done. They really want to understand.
Those exactly the patients that I like, because it becomes a partnership. And that's what medicine's about. It's a give and take. It's not come in, write a prescription for 7 minutes and out the door. So I think now we have a really good look at how you could open your practice, what you need to do to make it successful in terms of the marketing. Now, you know, Frank, I want you to tell me how we can keep the practice open, because it's all about collection down the road. You can see all the patients you want, and we've done it and not get paid for it because of various insurance scams and patients having huge deductibles all of a sudden. And the collection is very difficult. That's one of the other things that keep patients happy. I like to give what the cost is up front. There's no hidden fee in our practice. We look ahead, we find out what your deductible is, what the allowed amount is, and we tell you before I do the procedure. That's our technique. So there's no, you didn't tell me, and now they're kind of angry. How do you make your collections better? Is there something that we can do as physicians to be more efficient?
That's a great question. Just as an overall note, in larger organizations, causing a doctor to be a cog in a wheel ends up being a very limiting factor when patients are clearly showing that they prefer to have an individualized relationship with a doctor. So even though the independent practices are under financial pressure, they have huge marketing opportunities because they, I don't know if everybody remembers the advertisement for 7-Up as being the Un-Cola. It was a successful advertising campaign. An independent physician can advertise themselves as being a non-cog in a big wheel, mm-hmm. and a more personalized relationship with the patient, which is not only appropriate, it's also desirable, and I think the market is moving in that direction because patients have control over a much larger share of the entire healthcare spend.
True.
And I think that really bodes well for independent practices if they are able to take advantage of marketing and all the different services that are available to them from companies like the ones represented here today. From a collection standpoint, no doubt, I was just involved in a LinkedIn discussion that was asking, should a doctor serve as a financial advisor to the patient? And the conclusion was, no, not a financial advisor, but the doctor certainly should help the patient understand the cost of the plan of care and the financial implications of any condition that the patient might have. So you can offer anticipatory guidance to the patient and explain, given your current condition, this is probably what you'll need to spend over the next 12 months in order to manage it. Now, that's not counting if you fall down and break your leg or something else happens, but this is what you're going to need, and that's a great discussion because if the patient says, gosh, I don't want to spend that much, okay, get healthier. And so you can come up with some very specific action steps. There are certainly software programs that will allow you to accurately predict, based on the CPT codes of today's visit, how much the patient will have to pay over and above their copay. So you can make a very accurate prediction. You can help the patient set up a payment program. There's lots of things you can do on the beginning to make the patient feel comfortable and give them a way to handle the payment program. And then with a balance for billing insurance companies, lots of things can be done there to make things work more smoothly.
Okay. Let's take a small break. I want to ask you another question about strategies of payment because, you know, direct primary care practices are starting to come online. So that's another cash-based practice strategy that I think it should grow. And I want to know how we can educate doctors about how to go that route. Because it seems scary at first, but I really think it's the future. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic process.
The War State by Michael Swanson is a must-read for anyone interested in the critical 20 years after World War II, when the United States morphed from a constitutional republic to a global imperial superpower. Get The War State by Michael Swanson from Amazon.com today.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare, but for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose, and with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. You know, I believe that the future of medicine, I've done a lot of interviewing over the past, year. And one of the things that really needs to be, I hammer home every time that I'm on a show, is that it's less expensive to not use your insurance to actually pay cash for something than it is to use your quote-unquote insurance card. And it's also cheaper not to go to the hospital to get anything done because they jack up the price. And they don't even know, they can't even tell you what the price is. You can actually call a hospital, ask them how much it costs for a procedure, a test, and they actually can't tell you because they don't know. I think they literally go and make it up. And it depends on the patient and the day and who you're talking to. Because if you go up there with intention to the financial services office and say, I'm not paying this, what's the best deal you can cut me? They'll cut you a deal. It'll be half off. It'll be 75% off. And if you say, I'll pay you for it right now, it becomes extremely cost effective. But you have to know that you can do that. But the marketing, and here we go with medical marketing, we're talking about how to navigate it. But we really need to understand that we've been educated, miseducated to think that we don't have power, that the healthcare costs are supposed to be 100,000 times more than they really are, and we should like it, and there's nothing you can do about it. And as long as we as doctors and patients do that, it will continue, right? So this is all about navigating the system, and direct primary care practice is one model that I talked about at the beginning of the show that actually puts the power of the purse back with the patient. I've opened a semi-direct primary care part to my practice. $50 a month payments flat covers any ENT service that I offer in my office that I can do under my roof because I own my equipment, because I control my healthcare delivery. I want to get that out there to patients. I want people to know about it. How do I do that? I mean, how do we get, because I know that from a financial standpoint, you don't need to make $1 million in every patient. You just need enough volume of patients and you make the same amount of money. Everybody can afford it and everybody's happy. And there's nobody saying what you can't do. How do we get that out there, in your opinion, Frank?
The the percentage of patients that go to the web first to search and try to find a doctor is impressive. It's like over 70%. So the very first thing you do is get online to make sure that your website is good. After they see your website, they're going to go to ratings. So you try to do those. Everybody's going to get a negative review every now and then. This is an interesting phrase. If you regard negative reviews as pollution to your reputation, the best solution to pollution is dilution. So you dilute your negative reviews by managing positive reviews. But if your competitive differentiator is your ability to work on $50 a month, mm-hmm. Then you want to make sure that you ask questions of patients like, did you like the $50 a month? Did you like our ability to give you transparent pricing and to create flexible plans? And you're going to get lots of people to say yes. Well, now your review questions match your strategy. Your strategy needs to match your operational tactics. And your internal metrics need to measure what your strategy says you're trying to achieve. So if you do that, everything lines up. You'll get great reviews online. You can manage your reputation, and you can improve your market share. But again, you want to make sure that you understand the demographics of your market so you can get a handle on market share.
Mm-hmm. And I was just going to add to that model and that direct primary care model. My understanding is that's very popular up in the Pacific Northwest, and down here in the Southeast, it hasn't taken on yet. And right. So I would imagine that along with getting that message out, the marketing is going to be very important just on what direct primary care model is. I had a client who was dabbling in that. And there was a couple different things that reasons why it didn't take off. But one, I think, in addition to business partnerships, was their marketing efforts and trying to you're blazing a trail here in Georgia that hasn't been blazed yet. And so to understand that and then what you do with that is going to be important.
I think you're right. I mean, it's so new and it's too good to be true. There's a lot of things that people have just been brainwashed to believe. The first one was, if you don't have health insurance, you're going to die. That was the first brainwashed statement, which is completely untrue. And people really, really just took that to heart, to brain. And it's really hard to break that cycle. And when people realize, man, I'm only paying a little bit and I'm getting this, it's like an aha moment, you know? And something that it's near and dear to me, because I know that other doctors in Atlanta are actually trying this model, and it's just taking off. They've gone to the legislature here, and it's now considered, it's it's being legislated into existence. So it's not an insurance plan. So you can't be held under the Obamacare mandates under it. And you can actually, it can thrive. So it's being built. Now we need to get them to come. That's really what we're trying to do at this point. And I'm a little outside the box because I'm a specialist and I can do it. But I'm a solo practitioner and I'm a free thinker. So my job from my office is to carve out a niche for us so that we become the go-to office for that in Atlanta. And that would make us extremely happy because my goal is to get off of any insurance plan that's out there because I see the writing on the wall. It's not viable. It won't work. The next year or two, it's going to be like Medicaid for all. As soon as they get the market share, leverage will lock down and they'll give us less, pay for less, cover less, and we'll be out of business just because we don't have any, we can't do what we need to do for our patient. So this is a window, in my opinion, that doctors who are paying attention need to step through, close it behind us before we get sucked into you can't afford to stay open, which I think is the next cog in that wheel.
You know, you mentioned something earlier about you being in one specialty, and then that this is certainly one of the challenges for independent physicians and practices is that, so now I know you have this kind of neat cash model if I want to go that way. And I actually just learned about this. I was just working with an orthopedist in the last couple of weeks, and he's going on a pure cash model. And, you know, the first deal is like $300, and then the follow-up visit is $80, and that includes a splint and a cast and an x-ray and all that. Well, so when I was meeting with him, my older son had fractured his ankle earlier in the year. We went back through the bills. Our bills with supposedly high quality insurance, we won't name any names, but we had $850 out of pocket for that. In his system, it was it would have been $380 for the two visits in and out and done. And so now he is not nearly, convenience is a big deal in the marketing. But now that I understand that, so I told him I have a 13 and 11-year-old active boys. It's probably not my last visit. And actually, my 13-year-old has a swollen ankle right now. We found out last night. So I might be going back. But I'll drive. He's not as convenient to me as where I went last time. He's 7 miles. And in Atlanta, 7 miles could be forever. but I'll go back there now. And so one of the challenges is that I feel some of the independent practices need to get together if they are going to do that cash kind of presentation, because there are more high deductibles. We're on like a $4,000 deductible.
Oh, wow.
And so we pay a significant percentage of our stuff. That if he had a page on his website with other like-minded physicians that also had this low-cost cash model, I wouldn't even touch my insurance for broken ankle now going forward. I'm just going to go and write him a check for $380. He's happy. I'm happy. It's all good.
There you go. Yeah. It's just, we have to be vocal about it, I think. I think we're like the best kept secret because we don't get out there. And this is all about, you're afraid to make a jump because you don't know if you're going to waste your money or if it's going to blow up in your face. So this is all about make a jump, you know, negotiate your lease. Mine is coming up in the next year. And we were talking in the break about, it's not just finding you a space. It's about making the space that you're in even more cost effective. Tell us again how we can make, you know, work for ourselves here.
Right. Not everybody obviously is going to be starting up or adding satellite locations. And so you might think, oh, well, I don't need that service. Well, if you're leasing, and again, that cost is significant, ideally when you're about 12 to 18 months out of your lease, you want to be starting to think about that lease restructure. And it depends on how long ago you signed the lease. Some leases were signed 10 years ago at the height of the market.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously we had a reset since that time frame in terms of base rental rates and that sort of thing. Practices have been in existence for, you know, could be there in the 80s. I had an orthopedic group that owned two locations, the third location they leased, they had been there for 25 years. They had a personal guarantee in place that the physician didn't even realize was still in place after 25 years. Personal guarantee because the previous practice managers would just sign off and move it off their desk. Mm-hmm. And in that lease restructure, we looked at the market, evaluated moving, decided to stay in place, but we were able to garner some free rent, signed a 5-year lease extension, lowered the base rental rate, about $10,000 a year, which is $50,000. And then we garnered about $35,000 in tenant improvement dollars. So,
wow.
in that particular office, because it was there in the 80s, they had some new millwork and cabinetry they wanted to update. They wanted to make those their exam rooms all uniform, upgrade some flooring and some painting in the office, and just have a fresh look to it. Which again, from a marketing perspective, is going to attract patients, because it's an unintended consequence. But if your space is outdated and it looks like it's from, you know, a long time ago, then the idea and the unintended consequence is that, well, is this physician stuck in that time frame too? Are they practicing most current medicine, or are they updated in their current medicine, or are they still stuck back there? It's subconscious, but it could happen. And do they have the most advanced technology, and do they know the most recent algorithms of treatment? And so we're wanting to kind of have your practice mirror that. And if we can be a cost avoidance where we can have the landlord contribute to that, so that's something that's not coming out of pocket for the practice, you know, that becomes a win-win to be able to do that on the landlord's dime.
That sounds awesome. I mean, $50,000, maybe another hire or a raise for your office staff. I mean, it's a lot of things that can go on with that. It's like free money.
Right. So you can take that, you can put it towards investments, you can put it towards equipment, whatever that money might be in the reduction. But then also then in that case, $35,000 in tenant improvement dollars, and then you had 5 months of free rent. So it's over $100,000. And
that's pretty awesome.
Very real money that in a small, you know, independently owned practice can do a lot with.
Oh, absolutely. Now, I can't wait to use your services. Full disclosure. I'm going to call you right after. Give me your card, like, right now. I know we have to take a break, and when we come back, I want to ask Frank, do you have strategies for – I know you do the things in a very organized, quantitative manner. And I think if people had an algorithm to figure out, hey, how can I switch my practice into direct primary care? How many people do I need to really see? How many services should I really be able to offer to make money? It's, you know, so it's more, less, you know, throw it up on a wall, see if it sticks, or see to your pants, and more formal. I wonder, you know, if you offer that service. So let's find out more after we take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. You know, I was speaking with my guests in the break that, you know, this is like me talking to guests in my living room, because I want to know things, because I want to know things, and hopefully my listeners are coming along with me on this. But I think every private practice doctor, one of the things that would help us make this movement into direct primary care is to have a way to quantitatively figure out how do I make the switch? How many patients should I move into direct primary care? How can I make this a concerted effort so that I can, if my goal is in 3 years to be off of insurance, I want to do this in a way that makes it happen, and I'm not hunting and pecking and throwing it up on a wall to see if it sticks. So from your point of view, Frank, is there something that we can do to quantitate this so that we're doing this from a known method, as opposed to, well, I think if I talk to 5 people and I sign up 5 people every 2 weeks, then I'd be okay. I mean, how would you do this in a way that's going to make it work and happen?
Like any other business, the very first thing you need to do is understand your costs. A doctor's office, the costs are divided into 2 categories, fixed costs and variable costs. Fixed cost, rent, overhead, non-clinical personnel, billers, front desk people, okay, those have to be there. So you divide those, divide fixed costs by the number of encounters you're able to do, and you come up with a fixed cost per encounter. Then you have variable costs, and variable costs per encounter are going to be people, clinical staff, that have to be involved in the encounters. And the longer the amount of time they spend in each encounter, the higher your cost, because you're typically, even you may not be paying them by the hour, but it ends up, you can calculate their cost by the hour. From a pure business model standpoint, a doctor's office looks a lot like a restaurant. An exam room is like a restaurant table. You need to think about turnover. So you can look back and see if you take your total costs divide by total number of encounters, you get average cost per encounter. Then if you do total revenue and divide by the number of encounters, you get total revenue or average revenue per encounter. If you compare average revenue to average cost, the difference is obviously average profit per encounter. That ends up being a very important number. Now, you can take a look and see what your average collection rate is. You can go back and say, okay, how can I get this? To Jeff's point, the orthopedist probably looked at the amount of money he was receiving from insurance companies, also looked at the amount of money he needed, and came up with a reasonable guess as to how many encounters he could do in a month, and then did the math. So it's very easy to set up the business spreadsheet that you need, working with an accountant, working with a consultant, working with anybody else. You can set up a spreadsheet and say, okay, how many encounters do I need at this rate in order to make the money that I want to make? And now once you know how many patients you need, now you go to the website and marketing and try to get that number of patients. Mm-hmm. But Amanda Services, remember, it's going to act as a cost avoidance. So now one of your fixed costs is going down, which allows you to see fewer patients at a fixed price and still make the kind of money you want to make.
That's the key. I don't believe we should work harder. We need to work smarter. I mean, I think doctors have fallen into the trap of, I'll just see more people and it'll be okay. And people are seeing more people. They've had to add nurse practitioners, physician assistants, and they're making less. They can barely stay open. I mean, there's doctors losing their houses. That the mindset of driving a Ferrari is really not the case on an average physician. It's about making mortgage and payroll most of the time. And if you could figure out, and I think it's being done every day, that I have Dr. Josh Atlas, I think he's in Wichita. He does a talk at the American Physicians of Surgeons meetings, which is just phenomenal. When you listen to this, you're like, well, this is awesome. Why can't I do this? I think he sees three people a day. He has about 1,500 people in his practice. And he's pulling in, taking in, after all his costs, about $250,000 a year. That's medicine, where he can spend every single moment. Everybody loves him. He loves what he does. He gets up and he just has a great day every day. And his employees are happy. He's giving great care, and he's not worrying about billing and denials and pre-certifications. I think that once we, and I personally believe, you can't fix this system by political means. It's not going to work. We've seen that for two cycles of an election. It's other people telling you they're going to do stuff to get in, and then nothing happens. So I think the way to force change is to have a separate parallel system, make it thrive, educate people that they have a place to go, and when they opt out of this or leave it and the money dries up, I think the insurance companies will change, and then they'll come to the table, and then it'll mean something. Right now, they think you're stupid, so they're not going to change a thing. That's my opinion.
You know, it's funny you say that. We talked about, I think more and more physicians, if you're going to go into this cash or whatever you want to call it, low cost or more transparent model, then to work together and form alliances. And then there's also a lot of companies out there that are doing self-insured and HSAs. And so if you have groups of physicians that offer a wide range of services that are going to this lower cost or cash transparent, if you can get that group in front of employers that are doing self-insurance where they have more control over where they can send people and things like that, mm-hmm. there's a way to do it. As we said, I mean, there's certainly marketing we can do for individual practices to drive the right customers to you. But what we're talking about here is just kind of changing the overall conversation. But the good news is a lot of times when we try to change conversations for clients, it's one-sided. The thing I think the physicians need to realize is that we on the patient side, once we have kind of one encounter in the last year, unfortunately I've had two or three this year, mm-hmm. all of a sudden I'm now wanting to talk to people on that. So both sides, the patients and the physicians, are wanting to talk, and we just have a person in the middle. You know, we had an old minister that made me laugh because he said, you know, the reason why grandchildren and grandparents get along so well, they have a common enemy. So, you know, get the patients and the physicians talking and remove the, or even it can be the physicians and the companies if they're providing, you know, self-insurance and things like that. Get
That's
the health
a great
insurance
idea.
Out.
So, I mean, have you had any, I mean, they have to be a consortium of doctors, it sounds like. I would think to a primary care, someone who can be available to an employee or a small group and just say, just send your folks and just pay me this lump sum, that would probably work as well, would it not?
Right. I mean, certainly, as we said before, I mean, urgent care is one of the big entry points. And so if you're in urgent care and trying to do more of cash model, then going out and having those conversations and things like that. But urgent cares also see a lot of cash patients. And mm-hmm. so that's somebody that individual physicians that have transparent pricing, cash pricing, whatever, you should be talking to urgent cares because they obviously refer a lot out. And when they have somebody comes in, they know whether they paid cash or whether they had insurance. And so they might have a list of cash providers.
Right.
When I say cash, I mean, it doesn't mean someone doesn't have insurance, as we were talking about before. They may just have a very high deductible. I mean, I didn't do it at the beginning of the year, but I now view myself as kind of a cash insurance buyer, knowing that the first $4,000 is up to me.
That's true. And you better make sure that you're going to someone that you don't have to keep going back and engaging that $4,000 deductible. You want to be done once, right? Keep it moving, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And the only thing I would maybe add or think about too is in that direct primary care model is, do you have some sort of step based on age, based on risk factors? And that can be motivation. It's going to cost you more money. It costs you more money if you're smoking and if you're not exercising, et cetera. And then, you know, it'll cost you less money the healthier you are. And that could also help with that kind of cost per encounter and that sort of thing, because those patients who are sicker are going to naturally take more of your time.
That's a great idea. It's personal responsibility. You give a carrot. You spend less if you take care of yourself and you work harder at your own personal responsibility. It's a reward and a real one, not as opposed to some artificial thing. I think the basis of healthcare means both doctor and patient have a responsibility to each other. And to getting the goal is to get the patient better and out of your office, in my opinion, not to manage somebody with just keep coming back, you're not any better, I just keep adding another medication. That's just not my style. And I really think medicine has fallen a little bit into that mindset of just manage it, fix it, get to the next patient, fix them, get to the next patient. And I think patients need to want to have that done too. I don't subscribe, and you mentioned it initially, that someone sees something on an ad and comes in and expects you to give it to them. That will never happen in my practice, ever. It hasn't in the last 14 years, and you can find someone else if you want someone to cookbook it. That's just not me. But that's, again, another marketing tool. And it's nice to know that we can be rewarded for doing what we're trained to do, and people are looking for that. It's not obvious. You know, people are just so inundated. You wonder whether or not they have that mindset, but it's nice to know that they do. So in the next minute that we have, tell us how we can reach each one of you.
Our website is Crown Tenant Advisors, and my name is Amanda, and the company, one of the company owners, and we're a small boutique firm, so you can find me at amanda@crowntenantadvisors.com, and our phone number and everything else is on the website.
Excellent. Jeff?
Yeah, so it's Jeff Meddy, and I'm with Cardinal Web Solutions, and it's cardinalwebsolutions.com, and same thing, phone number, email, however you want to get us is on there.
Okay, and Frank, I know you're all pro.
My website is the Medical Consultants Group, 404-272-4883, email's on the site, you can take a look and find out a lot about what we do.
And I recommend that all my listeners, especially if you, as a patient, you need to tell your doctors about this. If you're unhappy with what's going on with your health care, make some changes and look at these avenues of education for your doctor, for yourself, so that we can change this system, because it starts with us. Thank you for listening. And again, you can check out my book, Big Medicine, The Cost of Corporate Control, How Doctors and Patients Working Together, Can We Build a Better System? You can get it on Kindle, Amazon, Kobo Books, and my website, drelanageorge.com. Take care.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.